She's been called the Queen of Swing. She is the band leader of the Knights of Swing here in St. Louis, a 16-piece orchestra that performs all over town. Could be performing for you as well. They play all the big band favorites from the 30s and 40s. She is our own multi-talented, multifaceted, all kinds of stuff, Maria Kina. Maria!
Hey!
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Before we get into business here.
Okay. You're going to ask her about the ice?
No, we got to ask her about the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh. So.
The song Wheel of Fortune? Or no.
The show.
Have you watched the Wheel of Fortune your whole life?
Yeah.
Occasionally, off and on, right. Do you remember at the very beginning when the Wheel of Fortune was on, and I'm thinking this is in the 1980s, it would start with, look at this fabulous studio. Look at this studio. Filled with fabulous prizes.
Yeah, washers and dryers.
All waiting to be won on, and then everybody would yell, Wheel of Fortune.
Never
happened. And then what would happen is they'd play the game,
and
after each time they'd win money, they would spend the money on the items. And so, Pat, I'll take the washer and dryer for $5,000. And the remember this?
I don't remember that.
I'm right about this.
No, you're wrong.
Jerry even called in to say I was right about it.
So you got all these people saw UFOs too, Michael. I'm just saying. If Maria Kina is the definitive voice on this, if she didn't see it, if she doesn't remember it didn't happen.
All right.
But it didn't. Okay. So, Maria, you've been in the news business, these many years. You're in the music business as well. I wanted to ask, who was the most interesting interview you've ever conducted over your many years? I mean, not that many years. You're not that old. Over your career of broadcasting, who would you put in the category of a fascinating interview? Could be somebody famous, could be somebody strange. Could be a story that was unlike any other that you've ever covered.
My gosh, the stories, that's a really tough one because there's so many.
Well, that's why I'm asking the question. And hoping to elicit something very interesting from you.
I can tell you some stories that really have moved me.
Okay, there you go.
There was a young man that came in here, a young boy who was waiting for a liver transplant.
Oof.
That was really tough to do that story.
Did he get it?
Yes, I believe he was going to get it.
Good.
I haven't checked back with him in a few years to see how he's doing.
Yeah.
The other thing is when the Afghan refugees first started coming into St. Louis.
Yeah.
It was still cold out, but it was a beautiful sunny day. And I went down to the riverfront because I saw these young children playing soccer.
Uh-huh.
And I pulled a Kevin Killeen, like, well, let's go down and talk with them. Well, it turns out they really couldn't speak English very much. They did have one person, a young boy, who would kind of interpret for them, but he was really bashful. And they were just playing their hearts out with that soccer.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, I said, do you miss your country? And he says, yes, I miss my people, but I don't miss the meanness.
Ah.
And I asked him, I said, what about this? And he goes, this. And I said, you know, we're building a soccer stadium. He goes, where? I'll go tomorrow. And at the time, it wasn't built yet. It wasn't completed. And I said, well, it's going to be right down on Market Street, and it'll be a great place. You'll love to go play soccer. And it just really hit me that those young children, they had come to America.
Wow.
And they were staying at a hotel at the time.
Yeah.
And while they missed their home, they knew that America had something better to offer and not
violence. It would be interesting to see 2 years hence how those refugees have found their way here, wouldn't it?
Yes, and I do intend to do that.
Because, you know, we've seen it in with the Bosnian community here, which has just been phenomenal. You go back to the Bosnian conflict of the mid-90s, and so many of the refugees settled in St. Louis, set up a community, really, in South St. Louis, and then began to
assimilate
into the culture. Lots of businesses started. One of my favorite officers in the St. Louis Police Department, Demir Hatzik, from that community,
right?
And they've completely assimilated and created this tremendous culture. We've got the Balkan
treat box.
Yes,
it's great food around.
And you know that's America right there.
What is
you
know?
I mean that is America, and I'd be curious to know how these Afghan refugees have fared here in our city.
Yeah, I actually intend to do a follow-up story on that because I know we've had a lot more coming in. But those children, you know, because they really pick up fast with the speaking of English. Because, they all had gathered around me and they were just watching me. And they didn't know what I was saying, but then they'd look at him and he would explain to them. And it was just, you could tell they were just thirsty for knowledge.
Right.
And just this whole new culture that they were being exposed to. So that was a really cool story.
That's a cool, happy
story. Most of them, you know, so much of the stuff we cover is not happy.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's sad, and I don't like that. On the music side, I interviewed Maynard Ferguson.
Oh, come on.
And
Maynard,
Trump player.
Oh, a tremendous trumpeter. Let's pull some Maynard Ferguson for our music appreciation segment.
Yeah. Maynard Ferguson.
And it was on the phone, so we weren't eye to eye. And he was having a clinic that night at one of the high schools.
Yeah.
And I was the MC of it. But I was interviewing him earlier in the day. And we're having this conversation. And I could tell he was really hard of hearing because, you know, he's been playing those high C's for many, many years.
A lot of horn noise in the
exactly.
ears.
Exactly. Yeah. All that music behind him. So I would ask a question and he'd keep on saying, what? What? And then I'd ask the question again. And, you know, finally we get through the interview. And he was a great man, great interview. And they take me in the back and they say, Mr. Ferguson, this is Maria Aquina. She interviewed you earlier today. And he looked at me and he goes, well, you're no man. I thought you were a man because he kept on saying to me on the air, yes, sir. Yes, sir. So he didn't know he was talking to a woman on the air.
Well, he had to have some age going on because you would not be mistaken for
no,
a man.
No, that's what he said then when he saw me. Yeah. He goes, well, you're no man. And I said, no.
Oh, it was
not.
A voice. It was a phone interview.
It was just a phone interview.
Oh, well, you do have that voice.
Yeah, and he
cut the guy a break. His name was Maynard. Can you imagine what life was like?
So Maynard Ferguson is da 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 da. That's Maynard Ferguson, right?
No, that's Chuck Mangione.
Oh, that is Chuck Mangione.
But Maynard Ferguson is Rocky.
Yes.
Da da da.
Yeah. Yeah.
Da
da.
And then he had so many. You know, his bands, just to play with Stan Kenton.
He did.
And
now
just a
that
great
I did not
player.
Know.
Yeah, he's really.
Now, is he still with us or is he? He's
we lost him.
Down below. Or, I mean, we don't know.
No, he's
really down
he's
below.
Up in a big band in the sky.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Where they never get a break.
That's cool. So we got to interview Charlie Daniels here.
Oh.
That's right.
Yeah.
He wrote a book. He
How was that?
Sort of shortly after that.
Yeah. Right? But it was a great interview.
Was it?
Really.
He talked like this.
Really good guy. Really good guy.
Aww.
And really great music. So, what about in the political sphere? Any notable interviews stand out for you?
I didn't get to interview President George W. Bush.
Yeah?
H.W. Never got to interview President Obama. President Clinton, I did.
Oh, you did?
And I did have a funny story about when he was coming through on his bus tour. They were down at Union Station.
Yeah, right.
And you guys know that energy. When you know you've got a winner and they come on the scene and you can just feel that energy going. Well, the national press was with him and I'm kind of going along down by the fountains there, you know, trying to be polite. And all of a sudden I get knocked to my knees and I'm like, well, who is this? What happened here? It was Andrea Mitchell from NBC.
Really? Andrea Mitchell bowled you over.
She 10 pounds of her.
Me. Exactly.
Andrea Mitchell.
Yes. She flattened me and I looked up and I'm like,
let that be a lesson to all of us.
Look at that. Andrea Mitchell just knocked me over.
Andrea Mitchell. Married to?
Yes.
She's married to the
Fed chair.
The Fed chair. Greenspan.
Former Alan Greenspan.
Yeah.
Who I believe is still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he is.
I'll bet she's knocked him over a few times.
Didn't he ever? True. Did you ever? Well, she's tiny. I mean, she's a little
she's
bitty.
Very
well, he's tiny.
Tiny.
Too. He always looked like the director to me, Woody.
Allen?
Woody Allen.
Really?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess I could see that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get back to Andrea Mitchell knocking you down. So did you confront her? Did you
no.
say anything? Is it Andrea?
No.
I
couldn't believe it, to tell you the truth. And I was still pretty much a cub reporter back then. I was just so taken back that she didn't even say I'm sorry.
No, of course not. Miserable. So. We've got to find out a way to get back at Andrea. You can do that, Michael. She's on MSNBC.
Is she though?
Yes, she is.
I don't know that she has too much going on.
She's
anymore,
got that noontime
she?
Show. I think
does she?
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch MSNBC.
Yeah,
I'm a
Fox News.
Here, this is Alan Greenspan.
Okay. Oh, this is good radio right here. Michael's showing pictures on his cell phone.
They look a lot alike.
He's true. He does.
I'm telling you.
They do. Look.
Woody Allen, not Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson, where's that guy from?
Cheers.
Yeah, he was in Cheers. Yeah. He was Woody.
He's had a tough time. Poor guy.
What? He's living a great life.
Well, he's had a lot of, you know, stuff and things.
Like what?
Well, all that stuff and things that he's
had. I think he lives out in Hawaii. I think he grows his own weed. I think he's happy.
Yeah, I think he smokes a lot of weed.
I think he and Willie are like besties.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I know.
Can you imagine what a night with those two guys would be like?
Oh, my goodness.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think? Like, Woody Harrelson, doesn't he just, like, ruin all the stereotypes?
About what?
Not Woody Harrelson.
Woody Allen. This is compelling. I've never had this much poignancy on the airwaves here at KMOX before. Michael Kelly can't get his Woodies figured out. You know, there's the Woody in Toy Story, too, Michael. You might want to.
Yeah. I always wanted one of those station wagons that they called the Woody.
Oh, you know, me like too. In the old movies, I love those.
The Woodies.
Those are fabulous. I would give anything to have a Woody.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
famous
cool.
Famous Woodies. Yeah. Woody Woodpecker.
Yes, there are a lot of famous Woodies.
Who else is a Woody?
Woody Williams, pitcher for the Cardinals in the 2000s.
There you go. There. Woody Woodpecker.
Yeah, you said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys know any Woodies?
Woody Wilson.
They didn't call him Woody, though.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You don't think his wife?
I bet his wife did.
Huh? Hey, come in here, Woody.
Well, he had two wives.
He had two wives?
Two wives and a mistress.
Really?
He did.
While he was president?
No, the mistress was before, but yeah.
Was this your favorite president?
No.
No, who was your favorite president?
Calvin Coolidge.
Calvin, keep it
John clear. Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah. From what state?
He was from Vermont. Well, he was the governor of Massachusetts. He was born in Vermont, but he went to Amherst College, became the governor of Massachusetts, ended the Boston police strike in 1919, making him very famous throughout the country.
How'd he end it?
And he made him go back to work.
Because
you cannot strike against the public safety, is what Woodrow Wilson said. Uh-huh. And the police officers and the police officers union, the leader, was Donald Regan, whose son, Donald Regan, became Ronald Reagan's chief of staff.
Yeah.
How about that for a little history lesson there, folks? Wow. That was all
Speaking of cheers, Cliff Clavin's in the house here right now.
That was all free for you right there, a little history lesson from the Voice of St. Louis. Maria Kina, it's always an ever-opening flower when you step in here, and you just never know what's going to happen. And we thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your news. And we thank Michael Kelly for confusing his Woodies. And we'll be back with more on Hancock and Kelly after this on KMOX. Trumpet virtuosity of Maynard Ferguson, of whom we spoke just recently with Maria Kina, Michael.
Would you ever consider naming somebody Maynard?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was good. I enjoyed that. What was it? What is this song?
This is, what's it called?
Birdland.
Oh, yeah, Birdland. That's a great tune.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a great recording of Manhattan Transfer doing Birdland a cappella, which one of these nights we'll play because it's phenomenal. But I'm going to take you back to your roots, Michael,
okay.
And because you have told me you don't like bluegrass music.
No, I'm not a big bluegrass fan.
And bluegrass music it's not the foundation, but it is foundational to American music.
Okay.
And it has been evolving ever since. But the original impetus of what we know as American bluegrass music actually comes from the Irish.
Hey now.
And the Scots. And it was the Scots and the Irish in the Appalachians that were playing in the 18th century. They were playing these what are called Irish jigs. And that was the kind of folk music that people grew up listening to there in the mountains. Might have sounded something like this. Now, that's the wrong one. Here's the Irish jig.
Sounds like every bar I went into in Ireland.
Yeah. It's good Irish music there.
It smells better here.
Yeah. So you've got that, and eventually, as this music began developing through the Appalachians and moving down through the southern western part of the United States, an American sound became prevalent, and it's something we call bluegrass music. And I can't think of a better personification of bluegrass music than Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. They were partners, one a banjo player, one a fiddle player. And they were very popular in the 50s and 60s. In fact, they wrote the theme song to the Beverly Hillbillies that you may remember. But perhaps their most famous piece was something called the Foggy Mountain Breakdown, Flatt and Scruggs. You can hear and feel the Irish jig influence in this music.
You can.
But the virtuosity, listen to them. I mean,
how quickly their fingers are moving.
Earl Scruggs on that banjo, man. Wow.
Is the banjo an American instrument?
Yeah, I mean, it's got some African roots to it.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about American music, is you've got all these influences. You've got the Irish jig, you've got African music that came up, and all of it just kind of merged together. The form. Well, by the 1960s and 70s, a style of incorporating bluegrass sounds into American rock and roll music. And one of the bands you probably never heard of that I like a lot is a band called Black Oak Arkansas. And they had a big hit in the early 1970s with a piece called Old Uncle Elijah. So you can hear the bluegrass in this.
Yeah.
Let's go a little forward when they get going here. Go ahead and skip a little forward, John.
Oh,
there we go.
Uncle Elijah, Uncle Elijah, he's still alive.
Still cooking.
Oh,
this is an Ozark band?
Yeah.
Uncle Elijah. Huh.
And you can hear the Irish jig in this?
Well, it's an evolution.
Early in life when he gambled the game and he carried a knife and he was winning that very night. He cussed the devil, yes, he cussed him good. He swore to lick him, yes, he swore he could. And he dared him to come to him if he
would. This is one of your favorite songs, huh?
It's a great piece.
Oh,
Old Uncle Elijah.
Uncle Elijah.
Listen to the harmony on
it. Yeah.
Uncle Elijah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was just a driving, and you got that same route going back to the Irish jig, on through the bluegrass, into this kind of what was hillbilly rock in the 1970s.
Right.
And hillbilly rock became southern rock later in that same decade, and you'll hear it personified in the music of the great band Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Well, it took so long for me to realize that my destiny was right before my eyes. If it were up to me to travel through this life, I'd find an open space for me to live out all my dreams. I'm such a lucky man.
And then you got this whole tradition of southern rockabilly music, Marshall Tucker Band, and it goes on and on. All of it traces its way back to Appalachia in the 19th century America.
And, of course, the Irish.
And the Irish.
And, I mean, who wouldn't have expected it, right? So when did you get into bluegrass?
Oh, I've always loved bluegrass.
Does it kind of play a role in ragtime? Because I think most listeners know you're a ragtime
player. Yeah, so, you know, ragtime's interesting because it incorporates. So there's no one ragtime. It evolved and developed. It was a syncopated music, and it was based on the march. You know, if you go back to the Sousa marches, the oompa, 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 the driving force of the bass line in Ragtime juxtaposed against a syncopated, you know, offbeat melody. And so, and that was Ragtime. But there were so many influences in early Ragtime, much of it African, but a lot of it European classical traditions that go back to, and the Irish jig is part of it, and what became bluegrass is part of it. But even the old, you know, English folk songs.
Wow.
Stephen Foster and Turkey in a Straw.
So, John, did you self-teach yourself this, or did you take some music classes that you learned this?
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of learn. And I love to see how music has evolved in this country. And then you got the whole off-branch of jazz, which is something altogether different, but still with a lot of the same building blocks that we see in this music. But I just wanted to take you on a little Irish.
I enjoyed that.
A little Irish tour this evening,
I bet
Michael.
Our listeners did, too. That's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. It's Late Night with Hancock and Kelly. We'll be back right here on the greatest radio station on the planet, KMOX. You are listening to Late Night with Hancock and Kelly. You can listen to us every Monday night. The Cardinals are not in town.
Which will be a while now.
For a while here on Monday nights. We have this week. Talk, you know, we're normally the political guys, but on Monday nights we like to
no
do
politics.
Non-politics.
Yep.
We like to have fun.
Yeah.
And so hopefully you'll continue to tune in with us. If you don't catch us on Monday nights, you can also catch us on Fridays from 8:30 to 11.
Something
we host
like that.
In the morning. We host the Hancock and Kelly, the radio show right here on KMOX. And then on Sundays you can tune in to Fox 2. In St. Louis at 8:30 in the morning. Andy Banker sits between us. We have Hancock and Kelly, the TV show. We're becoming just regular old moguls with all these shows we got going.
Yeah, not so much.
We ought to start a podcast.
Ooh.
We could do a topic on famous people who've died at the age of 27. Did you know there's like this whole club of famous people who were 27 years old when they died?
No.
Janis Joplin.
Janis Joplin.
27 years old.
Is that right?
Amy Winehouse. 27 years old.
Now, wait a minute. That was fairly recently, right?
Kurt Cobain. 27 years old.
He was the singer for the, what's it called?
The Nirvana.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jim Morrison.
He was the singer for the, what do you call him? The Doors.
Jimi Hendrix.
He was a singer for... Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, well, he owned his own. He had his own thing.
He was a big deal,
but
Jimi Hendrix.
He had that. People who died.
He played
at the
that
age
guitar thing. I mean, he was. He had the where you do the national anthem on the guitar. Yeah, he was big stuff. Well, you know, and so many of these very talented people who die young, you just it's so sad. And one of my favorite artists from back in the day was a kind of a folk rock singer named Jim Croce.
Operator.
Yeah, beautiful song.
Can you help
but he also he had the guy would tell stories with the songs and well, this is one of my favorites. Do we have it up there, John? Working at the Car Wash Blues. Have we got that one? We're going to look for it.
I was living in L.A. with my best old ex-friend Ray.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great description of a guy, right?
Guy who I knew well and sometimes hated. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I like Jim Croce, Canadian.
Canadian. Died in a plane crash.
Yeah, did he?
Because yes, and we were private plane, a little prop plane, flying a concert. Here's Working at the Car Wash Blues. Listen to this thing.
Well, I had just got out from the county prison, doing 90 days for non-support.
I'm not sure I know the song.
Oh, it's a great tune.
Tried to find me an executive position, but no matter how smooth I talk.
This is my go-to karaoke piece.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You karaoke to this?
Oh, yeah.
Does it get the crowd going?
Oh, they love it. I mean, can't keep the girls off of me.
Yeah, who can blame
you? Want to know the truth.
Yeah.
Jim Croce died at a young age.
Yeah, well, you got the Big Bopper. You got Chuck, what is his name? Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Died. Stevie Ray Vaughan died.
Plane crash. A lot of these guys in plane crashes.
Yeah, what's with people that, you know, but I don't know. Maybe that's part of what makes people's celebrity grow even more.
You know, you wonder like, about
would
that.
Elvis be Elvis if Elvis was still alive today?
If he hadn't died on the toilet back there.
Or Michael Jackson. I mean, I mean, think of how weird. I mean, first of all, Michael Jackson had a whole bag of issues that we all know about now. But think of how strange he would have become, you know, like had he still been alive. It's like that Phil Spector.
Yeah.
Well, it was a weirdo, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the way, I mean, I guess you, when you grow up in that much of celebrity, how could you be normal? I think dying early is just part of the deal.
Maybe, you know, but you also wonder what some of that talent would have created. And I think about it in terms of athletes. You know, I'm a big sports aficionado. Yeah. And you think, well, we lived it here,
Tavares.
6 years ago with Oscar Tavares dying in that car accident.
Daryl Kyle.
Yes. Yeah. In the hotel room in Chicago. You know, my dad, so for Christmas that year, my sister bought my dad tickets to Wrigley Field. He'd never been.
Uh-huh.
And my dad was a big baseball fan. And they had the whole train trip to Chicago and it was just dad and his daughter.
Oh, really?
Father-daughter trip.
Uh-huh.
And very special, you know, and they were going to go to this game, and it was the day that Daryl Kyle died. So they had taken
it was like
this
a Saturday, I believe.
Yeah, Saturday or Sunday. And it was a weekend game, and and Joe Girardi, the manager of the Cubs, came out and announced that there'd been this tragedy and the game's postponed or whatever. But yeah, Daryl Kyle and he passed away, and then within a year, the relief pitcher for the Cardinals, Josh Hancock, perished on the side
40.
Of the highway. On the side of the highway.
Yeah, but I mean, there's been some big ball sports player. My dad always used to talk about Len Bias. You know,
the basketball player.
Basketball. He was going to come out of college. He was going to be so great.
Yeah.
And died at a young age.
He did, and there was a player for the Boston Red Sox in the 1970s who played a year, maybe two, named Lyman Bostock, and he was going to be the next Carl Yastrzemski.
Right.
All the talent in the world. He made his debut. He was phenomenal, and then, you know, he perished at a young age, and you just hate to see. You think about Thurman Munson, the catcher for the Yankees. And the Yankees, you know, you think about their lineage of catchers from Bill Dickey to Yogi Berra to Elston Howard. And then here's Thurman Munson, who was an MVP in the American League, as was Howard, as was Berra. And he died in a plane crash.
Wow.
Right in the height of his prime years as a ball player. And tragedy is part of every life, and it affects entertainment, it affects sports, it affects us and our families, and all of us go through tragic times. It's just part of the human condition.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that, but I don't know, there's some type of connection that comes with celebrities. I remember when Kurt Cobain died, that would have been right when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you a Nirvana fan back in the day?
No, I really wasn't. Okay. I was a Pearl Jam fan, which was kind of a band that blossomed around the same time, same city,
right.
Seattle. And I remember them, you know, the news media, the way the news media portrays this stuff. It was, you know, the voice of a generation has died and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't that for me. It was, you know, and most of my friends, we were into Pearl Jam, which was spawned in the same thing. But now, as time's gone on, you see that Kurt Cobain was really a talent, and he had quite a bit of an impact. And I don't know, it is kind of sad, but I'm not sure he would be the celebrity he is today had he not perished.
The death almost magnified
who he was, the legend. And who he became, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and that's how it's kind of how it is with these people, Elvis, right?
Well, Elvis was no spring chicken, though. I mean, he died in 1977. He'd made his fame, and he was at that point in life, and he had a multitude of problems, did Elvis Presley, but he was living off of the success he had achieved in the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, but he was out there in Vegas singing it up, and then he had to place down. People still going down there. I don't get it. We've all heard George Ann getting busted by security.
Yeah, my wife almost got taken to the pokey, breaking into Graceland back. Yeah,
no, something I've never had a desire to go do.
Me either.
I've driven by it.
So we're in Memphis for whatever. I can't remember what it was. And we're down in Memphis, and she says, oh, I would love to go see Graceland. And I thought, you know, there's nothing I'd rather not do more than
the 1970s.
You know, it just doesn't. So but she really wanted to go. And so I said, well, sweetheart, I got a couple of calls I got to make.
Yeah, here, I'm going to drop you off. Run on in there.
Here's a Sinclair gas station over here. I'm gonna pull in. Look, right over there is the house. There it is. And she says, I'll just go. I just want to look around. And so I'll be right here, sweetheart.
Uh-huh.
So she gets out of the car. And Memphis, you know, it's not a great part of town,
no,
I guess, apparently.
No, not at all. Uh-uh.
And so she, you know, crosses the street there, whatever the street was, and gets up. And he's got a big, nice big, the house isn't that impressive, really.
Right.
I mean, from the street, it's just a, you know, right. it's a house. And so she's walking across the lawn there, and I'm kind of got one eye on her, and I'm on the phone. And all of a sudden, a security guard is descending upon my wife, informing her that apparently you have to have a ticket.
Yeah.
To go, you can't just walk across the lawn and walk in the front door.
Wow.
So, but she finally, she got her ticket. She got in. She had the door.
And so people have told me it's like the 1970s threw up. You know, he's got the coffee.
Oh, I'm sure.
The yellow, or the carpet.
The shag carpet.
Did you have shag carpet when you were a kid?
We had shag carpet.
You did too.
Yeah.
I'd have probably, thankfully my mom's out of town. She's not listening.
Loved it.
But I remember when I was a little guy, they had the carpet. The shag was, it had to have been that long, about an inch and a half.
Oh, more than that.
Yeah. And
buddy, we had, it was like waves of grain.
Yeah. And she had like a rake. And you could rake the carpet.
Rake
the carpet so it all went in one direction. It
oh,
was crazy.
Now if you get the shag carpet going just right, you kind of look like Don King, which is not all bad. All right, we got to step aside. We got one more segment. It's Michael Kelly and John Hancock. We're with all of you, all 12 of you here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It is late night with Hancock and Kelly. We're going to take you till 10 o'clock. Then we're going to have, what, the best of the Dave Glover show?
Yeah, is that what we get? Yeah, it's riveting.
Then we go to midnight, and we've got a new show that we're running around here.
We do?
Called The Other Side of Midnight. The Other Side of Midnight.
I think I saw that movie. Jane Seymour was in that movie.
Really?
Yes.
Wasn't she the medicine woman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jane Seymour, what was she in?
She was in The Other Side of Midnight, or whatever it's called. It's called The Other Side of the Mountain or something. It was the other, you know.
Well, so
she was also one of the six wives of Henry VIII, Jane Seymour.
She was.
You had Catherine Parr.
By the way,
Anne Boleyn.
Excellent musical. If it comes back to town, uh-huh. Six. It is a Broadway musical that comes to town.
It's about the six wives of...
It's about the six wives of King Henry VIII.
Wow.
And it's done in a, like, American Idol style.
Oh.
So each of the six
gets
wives tell their story to why they are the one wife that was the most important. And here's the other great thing about this. It is a one-act musical.
Wow.
So you are there from the beginning to the end, and you're done. There's no intermission.
All right, let's go to the... research cabinet here. See how many of the six wives I can get. Are you ready?
All right.
So you got Jane Seymour.
Okay, Jane
Seymour. You got Jane of Cleves. Anne of Cleves. You've got Anne Boleyn. You've got Catherine of Aragon.
Yes.
You've got Catherine. There's another Catherine. Catherine Howard.
Yes.
And
so there's three Catherines.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Catherine. So I got Catherine of Aragon, Catherine Howard, Jane of Cleves, Jane Seymour, Anne Boleyn. And there's another Catherine. Catherine. I don't know.
Parr.
Catherine Parr. Oh, I'm so close.
You are listening to Late Night with Hancock and Kelly. You can listen to us every Monday night. The Cardinals are not in town.
Which will be a while now.
For a while here on Monday nights. We have this. We talk, you know, we're normally the political guys, but on Monday nights we like to
no
do
politics.
Non-politics. Yep. We like to have fun.
Yeah.
And so hopefully you'll continue to tune in with us. If you don't... catch us on Monday nights. You can also catch us on Fridays from 8:30 to 11.
Something
we host
like
in the morning. We host the Hancock and Kelly, the radio show right here on KMOX. And then on Sundays, you can tune in to Fox 2 in St. Louis at 8:30 in the morning. Andy Banker sits between us. We have Hancock and Kelly, the TV show. We're becoming just regular old moguls with all these shows we got going
on. Yeah, not so much.
We ought to start a podcast.
Ooh.
We could do a topic on famous people who've died at the age of 27. Did you know there's like this whole club of famous people who were 27 years old when they died?
No.
Janis Joplin. 27 years old.
Is that right?
Amy Winehouse. 27 years old.
Now, wait a minute. That was fairly recently, right?
Kurt Cobain. 27
he
years
was,
old.
He was the singer for the, what you call him?
The Nirvana.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Jim Morrison.
He was the singer for the, what do you call him? The Doors.
Jimi Hendrix.
He was a singer for... Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, well, he owned his own. He had his own thing.
He was a big deal.
But
Jimi
there's
Hendrix.
A lot of that, famous people who died.
He played
at the
that
age
guitar thing. I mean, he was. He had the where you do the national anthem on the guitar. Yeah, he was big stuff. Well, you know, and so many of these very talented people who die young, you just it's so sad. And one of my favorite artists from back in the day was a kind of a folk rock singer named Jim Croce.
Operator.
Yeah, beautiful song.
Can you help
but he also he had the guy would tell stories with the songs and well, this is one of my favorites. Do we have it up there, John? Working at the Car Wash Blues. Have we got that one? We're going to look for it.
I was living in L.A. with my best old ex-friend, Ray.
Yeah.
What a great description of a guy, right?
Guy who I knew well and sometimes hated. Yeah.
I like Jim Croce. Canadian.
He was a Canadian. Died in a plane crash.
Yeah. Did he?
Yes. And we were, private plane, a little prop plane.
Yeah.
Flying a concert. Here's Working at the Car Wash Blues.
Listen to this thing.
That's a great tune.
Tried to find me an executive position, but no matter how smooth I talk, they wouldn't listen to the fact that I was a genius. The man said we got all that we can use. Now I got them steadily depressing, low down, mind messing, working at the car wash blues.
This is my go-to karaoke piece.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You karaoke to this?
Oh, yeah.
Does it get the crowd going?
Oh, they love it. I mean, can't keep the girls off of me.
Yeah, who can blame
them? You want to know the truth.
Yeah.
Jim Croce died at a young age.
Yeah, well, you got the Big Bopper. You got Chuck, what is his name? Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Died. Stevie Ray Vaughan died.
A lot of these guys in plane crashes.
Yeah, what's with people that, you know, but I don't know. Maybe that's part of what makes people's celebrity grow even more.
You know, you wonder
like,
about
would
that.
Elvis be Elvis if Elvis
if he hadn't
was still
died on
alive
the,
today?
If he hadn't died on the toilet back there.
Or Michael Jackson. I mean, think of how weird. I mean, first of all, Michael Jackson had a whole bag of issues that we all know about now. But think of how strange he would have become, you know, like had he still been alive. It's like that Phil Spector.
Yeah.
Well, it was a weirdo, right?
Yeah.
When you grow up in that much of celebrity, how could you be normal? I think dying early is just part of the deal.
Maybe, but you also wonder what some of that talent would have created. And I think about it in terms of athletes. You know, I'm a big sports aficionado. Yeah. And you think, well, we lived it here, six years ago with Oscar Tavares dying in that car accident.
Daryl Kyle.
In the hotel room in Chicago. You know, my dad... So for Christmas that year, my sister bought my dad tickets to Wrigley Field. He'd never been.
Uh-huh.
And my dad was a big baseball fan. And they had the whole train trip to Chicago. And it was just dad and his daughter.
Oh, really?
Father-daughter trip.
Uh-huh.
And very special, you know, and they were going to go to this game, and it was the day that Daryl Kyle died. So they had taken
it was like
this
Saturday, I believe.
Saturday or Sunday. And it was a weekend game, and Joe Girardi, the manager of the Cubs, came out and announced that there'd been this tragedy and the game's postponed or whatever. But Daryl Kyle, and he passed away. And then within a year, the relief pitcher for the Cardinals, Josh Hancock,
perished on the side 40. Of the highway. On the side of the highway.
Yeah, but there's been some big ball sports play. My dad always used to talk about Len Bias. You know,
the basketball player.
He was going to come out of college. He was going to be so great.
Yeah.
And died at a young age.
He did. And there was a player for the Boston Red Sox in the 1970s who played a year, maybe two, named Lyman Bostock. And he was going to be the next Carl Yastrzemski.
Right.
All the talent in the world. He made his debut. He was phenomenal. And then, you know, he perished at a young age. And you just hate to see. You think about Thurman Munson, the catcher for the Yankees. And the Yankees, you know, you think about their lineage of catchers from Bill Dickey to Yogi Berra to Elston Howard. And then here's Thurman Munson, who was an MVP in the American League, as was Howard, as was Berra. And he died in a plane crash.
Wow.
Right in the height of his prime years as a ball player. And it's part of tragedy is part of every life, and it affects entertainment, it affects sports, it affects us and our families, and all of us go through tragic times. It's just part of the human condition.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that, but I don't know, there's some type of connection that comes with celebrities. I remember when Kurt Cobain died, that would have been right when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you a Nirvana fan back in the day?
No, I really wasn't. Okay. I was a Pearl Jam fan, which was kind of a band that blossomed around the same time, same city, Seattle. And I remember them, you know, the news media, the way the news media portrays this stuff. It was, you know, the voice of a generation has died and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't that for me. It was, you know, and most of my friends, we were into Pearl Jam, which was spawned in the same thing. But now, as time's gone on, you see that Kurt Cobain was really a talent, and he had quite a bit of an impact. And I don't know, it is kind of sad, but I'm not sure he would be the celebrity he is today had he not perished.
The death almost magnified
who he was, the legend. And who he became, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and that's how it's kind of how it is with these people, Elvis, right?
Well, Elvis was no spring chicken, though. I mean, he died in 1977. He'd made his fame, and he was at that point in life, and he had a multitude of problems, did Elvis Presley, but he was living off of the success he had achieved in the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, but he was out there in Vegas singing it up, and then he had to place down. People still going down there. I don't get it. We've all heard George Ann getting busted by security one
day. My wife almost got taken to the pokey, breaking into Graceland back. Yeah,
no, something I've never had a desire to go do.
Me either.
I've driven by it.
So we're in Memphis for whatever. I can't remember what it was. And we're down in Memphis, and she says, oh, I would love to go see Graceland. And I thought, you know, there's nothing I'd rather not do more than
the 1970s.
You know, it just doesn't. But she really wanted to go. And so I said, well, sweetheart, I got a couple of calls I got to make.
Yeah, here, I'm going to drop you off. Run on in there.
Here's a Sinclair gas station over here. I'm gonna pull in. Look, right over there is the house. There it is. And she says, I'll just go. I just want to look around. I'll be right here, sweetheart.
Uh-huh.
So she gets out of the car. And Memphis, you know, it's not a great part of town,
apparently. Not at all. Uh-uh.
And so she, you know, crosses the street there, whatever the street was, and gets up. And he's got a big nice big. The house isn't that impressive, really.
Right.
I mean, from the street, it's just a, you know, it's a house. And so she's walking across the lawn there, and I'm kind of got one eye on her, and I'm on the phone. And all of a sudden, a security guard is descending upon my wife, informing her that apparently you have to have a ticket.
To go.
You can't just walk across the lawn and walk in the front door.
Wow.
So, but she finally got her ticket. She got in. She had the door.
And so people have told me it's like the 1970s threw up. You know, he's got the coffee.
Oh, I'm sure.
The yellow, or the carpet.
The shag carpet.
Did you have shag carpet when you were a kid?
We had shag carpet.
You did too.
Yeah.
I'd probably. Thankfully, my mom's out of town. She's not listening.
Loved it.
But I remember when I was a little guy, they had the carpet. The shag was, it had to have been that long, about an inch and a half.
Oh, more than that.
Yeah.
Waves of grain.
Yeah. And she had like a rake. And you could rake
the carpet.
Rake the carpet so it all went in one direction.
If you get the shag carpet going just right, you kind of look like Don King. which is not all bad. All right, we got to step aside. We got one more segment. It's Michael Kelly and John Hancock. We're with all of you, all 12 of you, here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It is late night with Hancock and Kelly. We're going to take you till 10 o'clock. Then we're going to have, what, the best of the Dave Glover show?
Yeah, is that what we get? Yeah, it's riveting.
Then we go to midnight, and we've got a new show that we're running around here.
We do?
Called The Other Side of Midnight. The Other Side of Midnight.
I think I saw that movie. Jane Seymour was in that movie.
Really?
Yes.
Wasn't she the medicine woman?
Yes.
Yeah. Jane Seymour, what was she in?
She was in The Other Side of Midnight, or whatever it's called. It's called The Other Side of the Mountain or something. It was the other, you know.
Well, so
she was also one of the six wives of Henry VIII, Jane Seymour.
She was.
You had Catherine Parr. By the way, Anne Boleyn.
Excellent musical. If it comes back to town, Six. It is a Broadway musical that comes to town. It's about the six wives of King Henry VIII.
Wow.
And it's done in a, like, American Idol style.
Oh.
So each of the six wives tell their story to why they are the one wife that was the most important. And here's the other great thing about this. It is a one-act musical.
Wow.
So you are there from the beginning to the end, and you're done. There's no intermission.
All right, let's go to the research cabinet here. See how many of the six wives I can get. Are you ready?
All right.
So you got Jane Seymour.
Okay, Jane Seymour.
You got Jane of Cleves. Anne of Cleves. You've got Anne Boleyn. You've got Catherine of Aragon.
Yes.
You've got Catherine. There's another Catherine. Catherine Howard.
Yes.
And
Catherines.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Catherine. So I got Catherine of Aragon, Catherine Howard, Jane of Cleves, Jane Seymour, Anne Boleyn, and there's another Catherine. Catherine. I don't know.
Parr.
Catherine Parr. Oh, I was so close. That was pretty good, though.
Yeah, the fact that you knew three or four of them was impressive.
I had five of them.
That was impressive. And you knew Catherine Parr was Catherine Parr.
Yeah, she was married to Jack Parr, the original host of The Tonight Show. Let's go to Obie. Obie, you're on KMOX.
Obie. Hey, John. I'm normally behind you 99.9% of the time.
Uh-oh.
But you're dead wrong on the Wheel of Fortune thing.
Ooh, yeah.
They always used to have prizes.
Really?
And you didn't have to buy the prizes. You could put it in a bank account.
Oh, you could
get bankrupt.
Okay, now Obie's helping
money.
So did they have washers and dryers for the love of Pete?
They had all kinds of overpriced things.
Yeah.
I remember my mom saying one time, I wouldn't pay $200 for that vase. You know, and
it's like cashing in your points at Dave and Buster's.
Right.
Well, Obie, hey, we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you calling, and wish you the very best in 2024.
I wish you guys the best, too. Can't wait to hear you again.
All right, thank you, brother. Sir. That was Obie. Well, so Michael, is painful as it may be for me to admit.
Well, I appreciate it.
You could be right about the Wheel of Fortune.
I am right. Hey, can you believe this? I got an article in my email.
Have you now?
I want to tell you about this before we get out of here.
Well, you please do.
That a Carey and a Buck could wind up being back in the booth together.
No.
So you know Harry Carey and Jack
Carey.
Buck did all those years together.
Jack Buck.
John Denton, who covers the Cardinals, the Cardinal beat, he posted a story earlier today that's saying that Joe Buck has made indications that he wouldn't mind doing a couple of games sitting in with Chip Carey if Chip Carey would be open to
him.
So Chip Carey's on the Cardinal cruise. You know, that's happening now.
Right.
Down there in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And so he contacted him, and he says, oh, my gosh. He said, Joe was one of the first person that called me and congratulated me when I got the
job. How cool would that be?
Could you imagine? He goes, I would love to have him in the booth with me.
Buck and Carey in the booth.
Could you imagine if we had Harry Carey's grandkid and Jack Buck's son sitting there doing some play-by-play?
That would be almost as good as the snooker card score I'm looking at from earlier this evening, Michael.
Why do you have to go there? Seriously, why do you have to go there?
Well, because it's right here in my hand.
All right, so we went and played a little snooker earlier together, and John, who is sitting up at nighttime watching internet snooker 24/7. Wound up beating me 4-1 today on the snooker table.
It was 4-1.
But it was, there was a couple of contests.
Oh, very close. In fact, the total points was only, there was only 98 total points between us.
You see what I have to deal with, PJ? It's just not good. I mean, here's what it comes down to is that I'm beginning to not want to play anymore.
Oh no,
you know.
No.
And so if I don't play, what? How chipper is he going to be when we have to come in here and do these shows? If I'm like, John, I'll see you down at the station about 20 minutes before we
never give up. What was it that Campbell said to the Lions?
Oh, he said, I thought it was don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Never give up.
Never give up. I'm not giving up. I'm over there with you.
You are.
Listen, I started to make it a game, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I just hang out. I listen to how many times you sniffle and snort. And hey, Kelly, I don't like to talk. All right, tell the people we got to go.
Well, we do have to go, but fortunately for all of you, we won't be here. But Dave Glover and the Best Of is going to be here. Maria Kina will bring you the news at 10 o'clock. And our new great show called Whatever It Is will be on at midnight here on KMOX. X.
It is late night with Hancock and Kelly. We're going to take you till 10 o'clock. Then we're going to have, what, the Best of the Dave Glover Show?
Yeah, is that what we get? Yeah, it's riveting.
Then we go to midnight, and we've got a new show that we're running around here.
We do?
Called The Other Side of Midnight. The Other Side of Midnight.
I think I saw that movie. Jane Seymour was in that movie.
Really?
Yes.
Wasn't she the medicine woman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jane Seymour, what was she in?
She was in The Other Side of Midnight, or whatever it's called. It's called The Other Side of the Mountain or something. It was the other, you know.
Well, so I...
She was also one of the six wives of Henry VIII, Jane Seymour.
She was.
You had Catherine Parr. By the way. Anne Boleyn.
Excellent musical. If it comes back to town, six. It is a Broadway musical that comes to town.
It's about the six wives of...
It's about the six wives of King Henry VIII.
Wow.
And it's done in a, like, American Idol style.
Oh.
So each of the six
gets
wives
voted off.
Tell their story to why they are the one wife that was the most important. And here's the other great thing about this. It is a one-act musical.
Wow.
So you are there from the beginning to the end and you're done. There's no intermission.
All right, let's go to the research cabinet here. See how many of the six wives I can get. Are you ready?
All right.
So you got Jane Seymour.
Okay, Jane.
You got Jane of Cleves, Anne of Cleves. You've got Anne Boleyn. You've got Catherine of Aragon.
Yes.
You've got Catherine. There's another Catherine Howard.
Yes.
And
so there's three Catherines.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Catherine. So I got Catherine of Aragon, Catherine Howard, Jane of Cleves, Jane Seymour, Anne Boleyn. And there's another Catherine. I don't know.
Parr.
Catherine Parr. Oh, I was so close. That was pretty good, though.
Yeah, the fact that you knew three or four of them was impressive.
I had five of them.
Yeah.
I had five of them.
That was impressive. And you knew Catherine Parr was Catherine Parr.
Yeah, she was married to Jack Parr, the original host of The Tonight Show. Let's go to Obi. Obi, you're on KMOX.
Obi. Hey, John. I'm normally behind you 99.9% of the time.
Uh-oh.
But you're dead wrong on the Wheel of Fortune thing.
Ooh, yeah.
They always used to have prizes.
Really?
And you didn't have to buy the prizes. You could put it in a bank account.
Oh, you could keep the money. Okay, now
Obi's
helping
the money.
Us. So did they have washers and dryers for the love of Pete?
They had all kinds of overpriced things.
Yeah.
I remember my mom saying one time, I wouldn't pay $200 for that vase. You know, and
it's like cashing in your points at Dave and Buster's.
Right.
Well, Obi, hey, we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you calling, and wish you the very best in 2024.
I wish you guys the best, too. Can't wait to hear you again.
All right, thank you, brother. Sir. That was Obi. Well, so Michael is painful as it may be for me to admit.
Well, I appreciate it.
You could be right about the Wheel of Fortune.
I am right. Hey, can you believe this? I got an article in my email.
Have you now?
I want to tell you about this before we get out of here.
Well, you please do.
That a Carrie and a buck could wind up being back in the booth together.
No.
So you know Harry Carey and Jack Carey. Buck did all those years together.
Jack Buck.
John Denton, who covers the Cardinals, the Cardinal beat, he posted a story earlier today that's saying that Joe Buck has made indications that he wouldn't mind doing a couple of games sitting in with Chip Carey if Chip Carey would be open to it. So Chip Carey's on the Cardinal cruise. You know, that's happening right now.
Right.
Down there in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And so he contacted him, and he says, oh, my gosh. He said, Joe was one of the first person that called me and congratulated me when I got the
job.
How
cool would that
be? Could you imagine? He goes, I would love to have him in the booth with me.
Buck and Carey in the booth.
Could you imagine if we had Harry Carey's grandkid and Jack Buck's son sitting there doing some play-by-play?
That would be almost as good as the snooker card score I'm looking at from earlier this evening, Michael.
Why do you have to go there? Seriously, why do you have to go there?
Well, because it's right here in my hand.
All right, so we went and played a little snooker earlier together, and John, who is sitting up at nighttime watching internet snooker 24/7, wound up beating me 4-1 today on the snooker table.
It was 4-1,
but there was a couple of contests.
Oh, very close! In fact, the total points was only there was only 98 total points between us.
Yeah. You see what I have to deal with, PJ? It's just not good. I mean, here's what it comes down to: is that I'm beginning to not want to play anymore.
Oh no,
you know.
No.
And so if I don't play, how chipper is he going to be when we have to come in here and do these shows? If I'm like, John, I'll see you down at the station about 20 minutes before we
never give up. What was it that Campbell
Jimbo
said to the Lions?
Oh, he said, I thought it was give up. Don't ever give up.
Never give up.
Never give up. I'm not giving up. I'm over there with you.
You are.
Listen, I started to make it a game, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I just hang out. I listen to how many times you sniffle and snort. And hey, Kelly, I don't like to talk. All right, tell the people we got to go.
Well, we do have to go, but fortunately for all of you, we won't be here. But Dave Glover and the Best Of is going to be here. Maria Kina will bring you the news at 10 o'clock. And our new great show called Whatever It Is will be on at midnight here on KMOX.